Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on A Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast. Ooh, that did not sound great.
It was perfect.
Oh, I heard it was like, podcast.
But you don't, like, just like I say to my students, if you believe it, you could achieve it. So I believe that it sounded great. So it sounded great.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome so much. Guys, it's been a little bit since this incident has happened, and I feel like it's now our time to talk about it. So the 6-year-old who shot their teacher? What?
Yikes on tikes on bikes.
Like, there's so many. When I saw that, there were a number of questions that went through my head. Number one, how the hell did this little boy? Here's the thing. 6-year-old. My children will be 6 years old next week.
Yes.
And just looking at them, I can never imagine them picking up a gun and shooting someone.
One, if, because a gun has kickback, so like, yes. I feel like if your girls picked up a gun, they would literally fall to the floor.
100%.
Question number one for me, why did this child choose this method to solve his problems? What made him think, this is the way to get back at her. This is the way to handle this situation.
Oh, yeah. And I would hate to say it started at home because, again, this just happened. And when I tell you, I look up this story every day for updates, and we're not getting much. Like, we know the gun is legal now at this point. We know that she was in the middle of teaching a lesson, and he literally stood up, took the gun out, and pointed it at her. In which she put up her hand to defend herself. Terrifying. And it went through her hand and into her chest, I believe. And then not only did she get shot, but then she was ushering the children out of the classroom while she was bleeding.
Did she also usher him out as well? Or did he just like walk out with the rest of them? Like, gotcha.
Well, I read one of the sources and it said that when the police arrived, he was being like held by another staff member. So I'm not sure if they heard, like, the gunshot was heard. She ushered the children out. Cause I know that one of the sources also said that there was a camera so you can see all the children coming out. And she was the last one to leave that classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure when the other adult came to like detain the kid or what happened. I'm not even sure.
Yeah. And I'm sure she'll speak out eventually. And I really hope, I hope that, you know, she's doing her best right now to cope and to wrap her head around things. 100%. And the fact that this internet community, the internet in general, is just an ugly, ugly place.
Yes.
And what was enraging me is the comments about the teacher and just almost placing blame on her.
Yep.
I don't care if I hurt your feelings Monday through Friday as your educator. I wouldn't. But, like, that's no way to solve an issue.
Not at all.
And that shouldn't be your first thought in resolving an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I did see over TikTok that someone posted a video that, granted, I haven't seen this in any of the news reports, but apparently I think it's a boy. I'm not sure. The 6-year-old. I'm not sure if it's a boy or not. Apparently the student brought in bullets prior, saying that he was going to use these. And according to the TikTok I saw, she went to admin to tell them about this. And they kind of just was like, it's nothing to worry about.
He's 6. What can he do?
But again, he had access to bullets. How do you know? I mean, clearly he had access to a gun as well.
Right. There was a gun in the home and he knew where it was.
Mm-hmm. And he knew how to use it,
which is terrifying.
Again, you're six.
Yeah, I would have a major lawsuit and I would own that school and I would never walk back in.
Oh, 100%.
That is me. That is me. That is me. That is me. I cannot speak for this young lady. And like I said, our thoughts and prayers are with her.
Yeah. I know she was in critical condition, but one of the reports I said that she's like, okay, and she's awake. And of course, she's asking how her students are. Like, what an amazing human being to have been shot. And then the first thing, how are my students? Are they okay? Like,
right. Well, she probably either blacked out or blanked out and didn't really know what else happened after she herself got shot. And you can never know the intentions of someone who's holding a gun. Like, you know, she could not have known that she was his only target.
Mm-hmm.
What if he had just gone on a rampage?
That's true.
She wouldn't know.
Yeah. I was going back and forth about doing this like lesson for this episode, but there's not enough information. And then I was thinking about like turning it like all the theories that I've heard over TikTok and like what in the education failed this little boy. You know what I mean? Because there are claims that he had previous behavior problems. What was being done? Again, the admin if it's true that he brought the bullets in, why didn't you do anything more other than dismiss this teacher's clearly very real concerns?
Absolutely. That's a concern.
So it's just, I just couldn't do it this week. I'm waiting for more information to come out. I don't know when we're going to get it. It just seems like information is very scarce on this case. And I think it's because of his age. Mm-hmm. I keep saying his, and I'm sorry if it's not because of their age. And it's just, I saw that this particular student would probably not get jail time and all of this stuff. Granted, a six-year-old doesn't need to be in a jail, but like you deliberately shot your teacher.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even know a proper housing facility for a six-year-old because even juvie, they're still too young.
Oh, 100%. And
obviously, like real jail is too much, and foster care is just a punishment in general for, and I'm not even saying the parents are to blame, but their child knew where their gun was and how to use it and where the bullets were and how to take it off safety. If it was on safety, I'm making an assumption there, but there's got to be we cannot just slap this kid on the wrist, and I'm not saying jail time, but is there some severe counseling we can get him? Yeah. Is there an educational program? I guess the best comparison is I'm thinking of is like boarding school or like a self-contained type of school that he could thrive in and do better in. I don't know. Are there options?
At the end of the day, something needs to happen because I feel like these kids growing up currently with the state of the education system, they're not being held accountable for their actions. And they're being shown that they could essentially do whatever they want and they're not going to get a consequence, or they're just going to get a quote unquote slap on the wrist, which is it is not how we need to be raising these children.
No, not at all. I definitely would like to follow this, and I think that you should cover it eventually when more information comes out. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if she'll do interviews later and if she'd be willing to come on here.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear. I'm curious to know what he was feeling, what she was feeling. Like, I just want to know everything. Like, because it's just too. The headline alone was just like 6-year-old shoots teacher. And you're like, bar? Excuse me?
Huh?
What? 6-year-old?
What was that?
Oh, yeah. Bizarre.
I was talking about it at work. And, you know, like Ashley and I were talking before we pressed record, I'm not taking away from what happened to Damar Hamlin, the football player that went into cardiac arrest. That is a very tragic situation, and it does show the danger of that sport. But the fact that majority of the tweets and headlines and Facebook posts and articles have all been about Damar Hamlin, and you have to actually go search for this headline.
Yes, you do.
And me bringing it up at work, and people are like, what? I didn't know about that. I haven't heard about that. And these are like people in the education system that do watch the news and are on some forms of social media. And I heard a TikToker say that. Why is this teacher's story not a headline equally as much as Damar Hamlin?
100%. It's because the respect that teachers get right now is non-existent.
Yeah.
Just so sad that it's come to this, that we aren't truly valued and appreciated the way that, you know, teachers once were. And it's just like, this is not our fault.
No, not at all.
We just happen to be in a very dying profession.
That's very true. And I saw another TikTok today. It was comedy, like it was meant to be funny.
Yeah.
But then when you are watching it, you're kind of almost triggered and you're like, whoa. Whoa, mm-hmm. Whoa, because he was like, it clips into him talking, but the first clip is, how easily do you think you would fall into a cult? And it clips to the teacher, and he's like, I actually think that I would be a perfect candidate for any cult leader because I was a teacher, and we are gaslighted to think that we went into this job for the students, and if we even bring up the money, we're not in it for the right reasons, and we stay past contract hours, and we are guilt-tripped, and we have that, and think about a cult leader. They're enthusiastic, and then think about your principal. Does a principal seem similar to a cult leader? And I was like, I mean, he just was listing all these things, and I was like, wow. Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
We're in our own little cult.
Yeah. And it's terrifying. When you compare like that, it's like, wow. Mm-hmm. Things really need to change.
Yeah.
I don't want to associate my job with a cult. I don't. No. I'm sorry. No, baby. It's not for me.
Oh, gosh. No, but it was, I mean, I'll post it on our story, but it was pretty funny. Like, just, and he was like, so yeah, I think it wouldn't take very much for me to be in a cult.
Wow, that's crazy. That is crazy. Mm-mm-mm. So our prayers are still out for Abigail Zwirner, the teacher who was shot by her 6-year-old student. Although she's no longer in critical condition, we can't begin to imagine the trauma that she has endured and what she's going to have to do to really recover from this incident.
Both mentally and physically.
100%. And whatever you choose, Abigail, just know that we teachers stand by you. If you're going to go back to the classroom, rock out, girl. If you're like, you know what, this was enough, again, rock out, girl. We are in support of you and you only, girlfriend.
Yep. Teachers Talk Crime got your back.
Yes, we do.
Should we make Abigail our star student?
Oh my gosh, we should.
Yeah.
I really love that.
That would be very special.
Oh, I love that so much. I gotta think of a new song for her.
Yeah. She didn't leave a review, but I know that.
This gold star's for you, babe.
Yeah, just jump right in it like that. Yeah.
I feel like we should, like. Maybe you didn't leave a review, but this gold star's for you. Oh, I couldn't breathe.
That was pretty good, too.
Oh, God, I got to try again. I got to do it again. I got to do her justice. Okay. You may not have just left a review, but this gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah.
Yeah, girl. Abigail Zwirner.
That one was for you.
For you, girl.
Love it.
I like that.
Well, we've had 3 glitches already in our system, and so we're going to jump right into it just in case the internet decides to hate us once again, and by the next episode, not this one, I'll be in my new recording studio. Everything came in the mail.
Oh, it's about to be real crazy. It's about to be real crazy.
I'm so excited.
It is.
So, Ashley, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora. Wow, I feel like I haven't done this in a long time. I feel like it's been a while.
Y'all hear Ashton?
Hey, Ashton. Hey, girl.
Okay. You really haven't. I know. I was thinking about that the other day and I was like, dang.
Yeah. Even when we banged out like three recordings last week, like, granted, we had the teacher stories, then we had you happy hour, and then our Monday episode. Like, this is really bizarre. Really
Yeah,
bizarre.
how bizarre. How bizarre.
How bizarre. And there's not really a trigger warning for this episode except for murder. And y'all already know what we do here on Teachers Talk Crime. We talk about murder. So the trigger warning is we're talking about murder, but you're here and you know that. So we're just going to jump right into today's lesson. Marlene Louise Olive was born on January 14th, 1959, in Norfolk, Virginia. And by the time this episode comes out, her birthday will have passed. And normally I would be like, oh my gosh, happy belated birthday. But once you hear what she did, you'll understand why I didn't. Shortly after being born, she was put up for adoption by her biological mother. And I combed through the internet, but it's not noted anywhere why her mother put her up for adoption. She was quickly adopted by Jim and Naomi Olive, a married couple of 10 years who desperately wanted a child of their own. Jim and Naomi met when Jim was an army recruit for World War II in 1944, and soon after meeting, they got married.
Aww,
Yeah, super cute.
that is cute.
Yeah, but child, just wait. There's a lot of things going on here. In the summer of 1959, Jim and Naomi moved their family to Ecuador for Jim's job, a job at Tenneco Oil Company that made very good money. So much money that the Olive family had servants in their home.
This is when the oil industry was booming, though.
Oh, was it? I don't know
Right at,
social studies things.
oh yeah, the oil industry was a booming.
Yeah, anything date and social studies related, count your girl out because she doesn't know anything about it.
Well, I only know that because obviously James talks about it because, he is not in the oil business, but he has to buy oil. I guess that puts
Oh,
you in the oil business. I don't
yeah,
really know.
he's definitely in
I've
the
just
oil
heard him.
business.
Yeah, I've just heard him say things. I occasionally listen, and some things stay in my head, and that's one
Okay.
of them. So, like, oh, and I think we were talking about, oh, we were watching a show, and it's like one of the world wars, and like then how like families were making money after that and were becoming very lucrative, like you're saying,
Oh.
in the oil business.
Okay, well, the more you know. Thanks for that. Naomi was a very overprotective mother. One of the sources I read even went as far to say that Naomi treated Marlene like a doll. For the first 6 months of Marlene's life, Naomi wore a face mask while around her and wanted everyone else who interacted with Marlene to do the same. She also sterilized everything Marlene touched and came in contact with. And this is very much giving me COVID-19
I was
vibes.
about to say the same thing.
Like, did she know something we didn't back
She was
then?
in the pandemic before we even knew about a pandemic.
100%. Like, I was reading this, like, is this sure this wasn't 2020? Because that's what we
Well,
all were doing.
you also know that we were having this conversation on Saturday, and they were talking about like first-time mothers and like just how neurotic you are as a first-time mother.
And I can definitely attest to that. I mean, my kids were in the NICU for the first 137 days of their life. And even when they came out, I just felt like I needed to protect them from everything because I felt like they were so fragile and delicate and dainty. And now they're just like playing in mud and doing all of the eating things off the floor. And I'm just like, look, girl, if it rock out, you know?
Yeah, keep doing you. Keep
Yeah.
doing you. You got this.
Yes. Jim not only adored living in Ecuador, but also adored his daughter even more. One source stated that he treated her like a princess. The two had a great relationship. Naomi, on the other hand, was not a fan of Ecuador at all and didn't have the best relationship with her daughter. She previously showed signs of mental illness prior to the move, but once they moved to Ecuador, things really escalated. According to one source, Naomi would constantly accuse Jim of having affairs and use alcohol to self-soothe. Also, during this time, she began having seizures.
So, we probably shouldn't be drinking.
Yeah, or consistently accusing our husband of having an affair.
Yeah.
And on all accounts, from what I read, he wasn't having an affair. So.
So he probably just came home and was like, oh, here we go again. Who's it going to be this time?
Yeah. When Marlene was 10 years old, she stumbled upon her adoption papers in her father's office. At the time, Marlene had no idea what the word adopt meant, so she asked her father. And after he told her, he reassured her that she was very loved and that she was chosen, which made her even more special. Even after this, Marlene was feeling sort of confused as to why her biological mother didn't want her and also felt a type of way toward her adoptive parents. And I'm not really sure why she felt a way toward her adoptive parents. Like, I could see you being like, oh my gosh, why didn't my mom want me? But like, you have these parents. I mean, Naomi is, you know, drunk and, you know, losing her mind. But her dad, you know, loved
her.
And
they're still together. They're not divorced or anything crazy like that. Like, they are still together. Your mom might have issues. But I also think that, I think that's just emotions that come with finding out that you're adopted. Like,
yeah,
this just, like, wave of emotions, especially when you stumble upon it and it's not something that you've known your whole life.
Yeah.
I've seen different sides of it when the kids have known from, like, the start.
Mm-hmm. In the sixth grade, Marlene announced the following to her class. I hate her. I hate my mother. She even went as far to ask her teacher to assist her with finding her biological mother. Apparently, Jim told her that he would help her locate her when she was 21, but she did not want to wait until then. The Olive family moved around a lot during the first 14 years of Marlene's life due to Jim losing and gaining new jobs. They moved back to the United States for good in March of 1973, settling in Terralina, California. Marlene, knowing Ecuador as her home for majority of her life, was not excited for the move to California due to the fact that it was portrayed to not be a good place to live in the media, which we'll circle back to this in a little bit. Jim worked a lot, which kept him away from the home. This meant that Marlene was left with Naomi. The move caused an increase in Naomi's drinking, so much so that she began talking to imaginary people.
Oh, Lord. Oh.
Yikes on zikes on bikes.
So, we probably should have been seeing some therapy before Ecuador,
mm-hmm.
but we definitely need to be seeking some type of help now that they're in California.
Yeah.
Because it's like getting bad.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't include this, which I should have. I don't know why I didn't. But she was at some point diagnosed with a mental disorder.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that she got diagnosed with something, but I highly doubt that drinking was on the list of things to do to help her condition.
Oh, definitely. Definitely was not. So with Naomi being drunk most of the time, she didn't pay much attention to her appearance or on Marlene. Due to this, Marlene and Naomi would fight a lot. Their fighting did not aid to their already failing relationship, and even though Jim and Marlene had a good relationship, it was becoming more strained due to the fact that he was away from home a lot.
Well, I could see that. I mean, the person that you want to be there isn't really there. Granted, they are providing financially for you, but
mm-hmm.
this goes to prove that children don't care about that. They want your time and they want your energy and moments with you over things. And then you're stuck in a house with an alcoholic mother who yeah. isn't even your biological mother, who's talking to the walls, basically.
Yeah. And apparently they had fish tanks around the house and she would talk to the fish, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was just not a good situation.
Mm.
Yeah. So like I stated a minute ago, Marlene was afraid of moving to California due to the bad rep that it got in the media. However, after moving to California, Marlene began to dabble in the things that she was once so afraid of. According to one source, Marlene fell into a slutty crowd and began doing drugs and sleeping around.
Oh, Marlene.
Yeah. The same source also said that she was also into sex work and witchcraft.
That's very two different ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah. So you were like low-key a sex worker, but you were also like Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
So, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I just, that one kind of stumped me there.
Yeah, it when I was reading it, I was like, oh, okay.
And is she still like 14-ish, 15-ish?
You know, they didn't give much age like of her around this time, but I'm assuming around like junior high-ish, this is the time.
I would say 14 to 16.
Yeah.
Okay.
She dressed as a glam rocker during this time, and I had no idea what a glam rocker was, so I looked it up, and I was still very confused.
I'm gonna look it up, but what I'm picturing is a Bratz doll. Do you remember the Bratz
Durr.
dolls? I loved the Bratz dolls.
Yeah, the Bratz dolls were pretty dope, and they're making a comeback now too.
Yes, they are. They really are. So,
You know, it the pictures, I was confused because it looks like regular like 80s, and I typed in, I think I put in 1970s because they came back in 73, so I typed in glam rocker 1970s, and it literally just looked like typical 80s wear, like the leggings and the skirts that were kind of layered and the crop tops, but I don't know if that's considered glam rocker.
it's got a lot of glitter, that's for
Yes.
sure.
And
Okay.
rhinestones.
Yeah. So, I mean, this doesn't look any. Oh, wait, we've got some just regular teenagers, but I guess wearing crop tops and stuff maybe wasn't so normal back then for
Yeah.
girls. I don't know.
Yeah, it again, I was very confuzzled.
Okay. Well, this just looks like normal 70s attire to me, but
Yeah.
maybe we're missing something, so let us know.
Yeah, if you know what a glam rocker fashion is, just put a disco ball in the comments and tell us what that is.
Yeah, because it's looking like normal 70s wear to me.
Yeah. Nonetheless, this is what Marlene was going for. Now, Naomi, drunk and still talking to imaginary people and fish, did not like Marlene's new fashion sense and would verbally abuse her, going as far as calling her a whore.
Well, I have this wild, crazy idea that probably didn't help your relationship with your daughter.
Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I personally don't think that. I don't know what sense that makes. I'm very like, whoa.
And this next part is wild. According to one source, Naomi once walked around naked in front of Marlene while in a psychotic state and said, "Your real mother was a whore."
Oh, this is not
Healthy?
healthy by any stretch of the imagination, and it is creating traumas and self-worth issues and self-doubt issues. And I'm sorry, lady, you're the one that's talking to fish.
Yeah, you like blah blah blah, and they like, ma'am,
Bloop,
what?
bloop, bloop, bloop.
And honestly, like you, granted, you adopted her.
You chose her.
You wanted her, and now you're making her feel very unwanted.
So why did you ever adopt her?
Right?
She could have been with a family that did truly want her, that was not an alcoholic and not belittling.
When Jin was home, he would often comfort and protect Naomi. Clearly, this did not go over well for Marlene's relationship with her mother or her father.
So he was protecting his wife.
Yes, and one of the sources I read, it was kind of like it like gave the facts and had opinions, and it was just like, well, I wonder why she wasn't being treated for her mental illness, but also you have to think about the times and their probably wasn't much treatment that wasn't going to leave her like a vegetable.
Right. So this is in this like the time frame of like electroshock
Yeah.
therapy and stuff like that. Like, and look how that's turned out, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, that's no longer a thing.
Well, I think this is also too when like psych wards were like a big thing, and
Ooh.
anyone that was just like considered mental got put in a psych ward.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And I don't think that I I'm not sure if he did research and was like, this is not what I want for my wife, or just like he didn't do it at all. But regardless, he didn't get her any type of help.
Why? You know, I don't know the right solution, but I don't see why he couldn't have maybe hired, because it doesn't seem like money was an issue, mm-hmm. hired someone to take better care of Marlene, or hire someone that is like basically, you know, Marlene's, Naomi's nurse or something like that. Oh. Like, why didn't you hire someone to be in the house instead of these two females? One's an alcoholic drunk that's not going to be a motherly figure, and one who is growing up in her teenage years and trying to figure herself out.
Yeah.
Put someone in there that is a healthy person.
That's actually a really good solution. I wonder if that was even, I mean, it clearly wasn't ever, I mean, not to our knowledge, it was ever considered, but I think that would have done a great deal of help.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it was to help Naomi or whether it's to help Marlene, as long as someone was there to help someone.
Yeah.
And be a mediator, be the mediator that he should have been if he was there.
Yeah, I agree. Continuing down her rebellious path, Marlene began to shoplift and steal her parents' credit cards. She got caught shoplifting when she was in the ninth grade and got arrested. Her parents bailed her out of jail, but she continued to disobey her parents and get into arguments with her mother. In 1974, Marlene decided to dabble in LSD.
Uh-oh, that's like a hallucinogenic? No, yeah. No. No. Isn't it? Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she did it on the front lawn of her school, Terra Linda High School.
I don't think this went over well.
No. And not only was she on LSD, she was having a really bad trip. Her fellow classmates stood on the front lawn laughing and making fun of her.
Aww.
Yeah.
Give that baby some help. If y'all see something, say something.
You know. But I also don't know what level of help was available back in the 1970s.
I agree. And I don't know how much people actually knew about LSD.
Yeah. I think they were just like, drugs, they're cool.
Everyone's doing them.
I'll do them too, probably.
And then people were like, we really need to create the DARE program, guys.
Yeah. Where is that program?
Who knows?
Because, you know, they used to come into that school with the shirts and everything.
And the nasty videos. I actually really looked forward to it. I found that stuff fascinating.
Man, I got to Google to see what they up to after this episode, because they need to come back. They need to make a comeback.
They do.
19-year-old Charles Riley came to her rescue and ordered all the kids laughing at Marlene to leave her alone. Charles, a high school dropout, was at the school that day because he dealt drugs there.
And he's a winner.
Mm-hmm. He's a star. And it was that day that their lives changed for the worst.
Oh, I can already tell you, but he played a hero. It's that hero effect. So he came to her rescue, and mm-hmm. he was her hero, and mm-hmm. he told people to stop making fun of her, and he saved her. Mm-hmm. No, boo-boo. No.
See, you're right about that, but wait till you hear a little bit more about Charles, because you're going to be like, what? I wasn't expecting that.
Okay.
Charles was born in 1955. His mother was a homemaker, and his father was a grocery store clerk. Charles had a younger brother and sister. He was described as being a happy and affectionate kid. However, he did become obese during his school years and unfortunately began getting bullied. One source stated that his peers called him Boulder and Fat Man.
Aww.
Yeah. They would also tease him, saying that he had a charge account at Jack in the Box.
Is that kind of like Jack's?
Well, I know Jack in the Box. I've never been there before, but when I was down in Texas, there still exists, but it's like they have like a smorgasbord of things in there, and it's called Jack in the Box because you never know like what you're going to get like when you like use a Jack in the Box. And I was like, wow, that's so clever. So they have like fast food stuff and like Chinese food and like egg rolls. Like it's like a collection of stuff in there. Macaroni and cheese. It's just, you can get a lot of things there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's news to me.
Yeah, I didn't get to go. I really wanted to because, like, hello, all the types of foods in one area, sign me up.
I was about to say, that just sounds like an overwhelming experience, yeah. But one that you need to have.
It sounds like I would have enjoyed myself and then probably pooped myself later.
I agree with that entire statement.
At the age of 15, Charles weighed 300 pounds.
Oh, God.
So on the day that Charles and Marlene met, he was also at the school to gain popularity with the students since he didn't have much of a social life.
So he is trying to gain cool points, so to speak. So his idea of cool points would be to deal drugs.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Charles was immediately captivated by Marlene. However, pretty and skinny Marlene wanted nothing to do with Charles due to his size. At least at first. Charles, determined to make Marlene his, bought her gifts, gave her affection. You know, like all the things you do when you're trying to impress somebody, you know, buy them things. Oh my God, you're so pretty. You're so beautiful. Here's a flower. You know, things like that.
And she is being neglected at home, so these probably started working.
Not necessarily.
Oh.
It wasn't until Charles offered to get her drugs that she decided to give in and have sex with him.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Nope. Nope.
He was really trying to.
He was.
Like, he was out here really buying your affection and, like, showing you that he can be a good guy.
Yeah.
Because you know deep down he probably does not want to be the drug dealer.
Mm-hmm. He just wanted, I feel like, friends and to just,
yeah,
you know, be wanted by people of his own age, you know?
That's sad.
Marlene and Charles started dating, but Marlene had ulterior motives. Marlene was smart and knew that Charles was an easy target, overweight, low self-esteem, and had never had a girlfriend. She began using Charles. Marlene would have him steal things for her that she wanted from stores. He was essentially at her beck and call. Marlene called the shots and Charles followed them. Although Charles sold drugs, he never had a record until after meeting Marlene. Yeah.
Well, you know, it even though it was the 70s, it happens even today. I mean,
oh yeah,
you take advantage of the weak, and weakness is sometimes obvious, you know, and people like Marlene can see straight through that.
Yeah. Jim and Naomi approved of Charles at first, but it wasn't until Marlene kept getting into trouble and getting arrested that they realized this relationship was not a good one. According to one source, Marlene and Charles stole $6,000 worth of clothing and got arrested for it. Jim bailed Marlene out of jail and also threatened to send her to juvie if she didn't get her act together, and Charles's parents bailed him out of jail. Despite this incident, Marlene and Charles continued to see each other. During this time, Marlene also became vocal about her desire to kill her mother. As per usual, her friends brushed it off to typical things that teens say when they're upset with their parents.
We don't do that around here, guys.
No, we don't.
We just do not do that.
We don't say that stuff. We don't talk about Bruno, and we don't talk about that.
Nope. Mm-mm. And we don't chalk it up as jokes, because mm-hmm. where a joke lies, there is some truth.
Oh, yeah. Little did they know, Marlene meant every word of what she was saying. According to one source, from the winter of 1974 to 1975, Marlene was obsessed with the thought of killing her mother. She even tried once by crushing up prescription pills and putting them in her mother's food in hopes that she would overdose. Thankfully, Naomi refused to eat the food, claiming that it was too bitter.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Wonder why it was bitter.
Mm-hmm. Mind you, during this time, Marlene and Charles are still Bonnie and Clyde-ing it up. And in June of 1975, Jim was absolutely over Marlene and her relationship with Charles. He told Marlene straight up that he was going to ground her all summer and send her to a boarding school come the fall, which was understandable. She was literally doing everything she was not supposed to be doing. Drugs, shoplifting, having sex, you know, all of those things. Her parents had continued to bail her out of situation after situation, and this relationship essentially made these behaviors escalate. However, My concern is, as a parent, did you ever try to do anything to help her?
That, and I don't think that boarding school was a wrong answer.
No.
And I don't think that sending your kid to get help is a wrong answer.
No.
But again, Jim was always gone, mm-hmm. and Naomi wasn't the most aware mother.
She was talking to fish.
She was talking to fish, like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and they was like,
yep. Mm-hmm. And Naomi did do, like, a number in her head. But you're right. Like, what did you sit down and say, okay, babe, well, if I stay home more, if I promise to stop going on the road as much, is that what you need from me? Did they ever stop and ask what she needed from them? Because all of this to me is just attention-seeking teenage behavior.
Oh, 100%.
Look at me. I got locked up again, which will now force you to come and interact with me.
Yes. And at that point, I feel like any attention was good attention for her, you know?
Correct.
And I'm not blaming their parenting.
No.
I'm not blaming them at all. But also, you have to think. You see your child acting out. You see, what did you do to assist her when she was clearly spiraling out of control?
And begging for help in her own way.
Mm-hmm.
She stole $6,000 worth of clothes.
And I believe jewelry was in that as well. It was mostly clothes, but there was also jewelry. But still, $6,000?
And back in the 70s?
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
$6,000 in 1970 was $46,000.
That is bizarro.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
So could you imagine? That's like five Louis, and you just stole them. You just walked out with them.
And like, what? Like, I'm curious how they were stealing. Like,
you know, and I don't mean this ugly, but he's not a man that can just, you know, sneak by.
Yeah.
You know, if he was that large of a guy, he's gonna turn some heads.
Yeah. I mean, I know back in the day, I mean, you know, again, everybody's not perfect. Everybody has a past. Back in the day when I was a young whippersnapper, I used to steal. I'm not proud of it, but I would like,
did you know?
I did. Yeah. And, you know, we're all about being vulnerable on this podcast, so I'm not going to hide my past from y'all. But I know when I was not stealing $6,000 worth of things. But, you know, I went into the store when, you know, I got me a little T-shirt and, you know, I would wear a sweatshirt to the store and then put it on under my sweatshirt and then, like, walk out the store. And I felt like such a badass. But, like, again, like, I don't think that's, like, even if that's the route that you were going, you can't fit $6,000 worth of clothing under a sweatshirt.
Nope.
No.
And, I mean, I have a friend. She's a little klepto. Like, I mean, and again, nothing big. And stealing's never right. I'm not condoning it.
Not at all.
But, you know, like, she'll go in a store and she'll take the tag off sunglasses and put them on her head like she was wearing them. In the beginning, and she'll put earrings in her ear and walk out. Like, she'll, you know, similar things. But again, that's like a $5 pair of earrings or a $10 pair of sunglasses.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine back in the 70s what $6,000 worth of merchandise would look like.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know how they pulled that off. I'd be curious to figure, like, you couldn't have just put it in a bag. Like, you weren't just blatantly walking out the store. Like, how were you all going to finagle this?
Well, they did, and they got caught. So true. There's that.
True. So it was after this that Jim also told Charles to stay away from Marlene or else he would kill him.
Oh.
Yeah, that got very morbid very fast.
That was a little bold. That was a very bold move, sir. We went from boarding school to killing. That went from 0 to 100.
Oh, yeah. On June 21st, 1975, Marlene and Naomi got into yet another fight. Now, some of my forces, because I'm a superhero. There's a little discrepancy on the date, because it says some sources say that on this date was when they got into a fight and the plan that they're about to describe happened. And others say that the plan was executed on this day. So I'm not sure which day it is, but nonetheless, they got into a fight. Okay. And after this fight, Marlene called Charles and stated the following to him. We've got to kill this bitch today.
Oh, God.
Yes. Now, Charles is a lover, not a fighter. And he didn't want to kill anyone. However, Marlene, being the manipulator that she was, told Charles that if he really loved her, that he would do this for her.
No, Charles, that's not what love is. You go find you a nice lady. Mm-hmm. Okay. You go find you a nice lady now.
Yep. Who truly loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't get you into situations stealing $6,000 worth of things. Later, according to Charles himself, he stated that she even said that if he didn't do this for her, that she would break up with him.
I'd be like, okay.
Charles was not like, okay.
I see that. And yeah. This little thought he meant thought ruined his life.
Mm-hmm. This is when Marlene concocted her plan, which was as follows. She would get Jim out of the house by going somewhere with him, and while they were out, Charles would go and kill her mom. So Marlene did just that. She convinced her father to take her out on a shopping trip and made sure to leave the door unlocked when they left, so Charles would be able to enter the house easily. Before heading to Marlene's house with his .22 revolver and hammer, Charles took some LSD.
Of course he did.
And based on what we know about Charles, it was probably for courage, because this man did not want to do this.
Well, it sounded a lot like Jeremy Steinke. Remember you how know, much cocaine he did?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
How he was still standing, we are not sure.
Yeah. And once inside the Olive residence, Charles found Naomi sleeping and began hitting her in the head with the hammer. The hammer got stuck in her skull, so he went to the kitchen to get a knife and used that knife to stab her to death.
It got stuck in her skull?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was the claw part or the other part, but he was just, yeah. I don't even want to envision it because it makes me cringe.
And then he was like, oh, I got a great idea. I got to get that out. So let me go and get this knife.
Yeah. And then he stabbed her to death.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. For somebody who didn't want to do that,
I mean, it was
a lot.
It might have been the LSD, man.
It could have been. I'm with you.
Yeah. It was that LSD courage.
Well, I guess it could be that good poo nanny, too, you know?
The poo nanny.
I mean, because I'm not just going to go kill somebody while I'm on LSD. I mean, but for some good poo nanny.
I mean, and this was his first girlfriend, so.
True. Very true.
And he never had poo nanny in his life.
And that's the only poo nanny he ever had.
You know, it correct.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say I relate, but.
But what?
I don't even know. I don't know. I wonder.
Shut up, Brooke. Shut up right now.
Anywho.
I wonder if mine.
We did not need to finish that.
Yo, I'm crying. That is hilarious. I'm crying. But, like, for real, how many of y'all thinking that right now?
Yeah.
How many of y'all thinking, like, well, am I that talented and gifted? Oh, gosh. Oh, my God. That was good. Mm-hmm. The plan originally was to only kill Naomi. Unfortunately, Jim and Marlene arrived home while Charles was still there. So after coming into the bloody scene, Charles shot Jim and killed him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now that didn't, and I'm not saying Naomi deserved to die. Nobody deserves to die, but that escalated far beyond where it should have.
And it's like, there were two like stories. There was one that said that he came in while Charles was still like there and like around, and the knife was on the nightstand of the room. So what it would said was that Jim picked up the knife and tried to attack Charles, and then Charles shot him. And then the other story was that, you know, he was hiding, waiting for him to like come home. Wait. And then when he came home, he came out and shot him. So I'm not sure which one is the actual story, but nonetheless, he was shot.
But it's also not like noted that, like, we know that Marlene gave the go-ahead for Naomi, but we don't feel like she gave that same call for Jim, do we?
No, we don't, but she also didn't have much remorse, and I'll get into that in a little bit, too. So it's okay. Just like, I mean, I know she didn't have a great relationship, as great as when she was a child with her dad due to everything going on, but I, like, based on her actions, like, she didn't really care that he was also, like, collateral.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So Marlene and Charles wrapped up the bodies in either rugs or sheets, depending on which source you read. And they waited until dark to move the bodies using Charles's car to China Camp State Park, which was about 20 minutes away from the Olives house. They dumped Naomi and Jim's body into a barbecue pit and set them on fire, which is why this episode is called The Barbecue Murders.
Oh.
Yeah.
And they're at a state park.
Yeah. You know how they have those big pits that you can just, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what they did. So after they set them on fire, Marlene and Charles returned to the home to clean up what they had done. On June 22nd, 1975, firefighters arrived at China Camp State Park to put out the flames, but wouldn't discover the human remains of Jim and Naomi until about a week later. During this time, Marlene and Charles were just living it up at Marlene's house. Living it up. Running up her parents' credit cards, their checkbooks, cash, partying, buying food, just, you know, again, even if Jim wasn't supposed to be murdered, they had clearly no remorse for what they did.
They were not sitting around crying, nor were they turning themselves in.
No.
So.
Mm-mm. They even bragged to their friends about what they had done, but I'm guessing either they didn't believe them again, or they were hoping that someone else would go and report to the police what had happened.
The Jeremy Steinke mm-hmm. and Jasmine Richardson yep. case.
That's throughout this whole thing, I was like, dang, this is really very similar to that case.
It really is. But I mean, this is like the 70s virgin.
The virgin, yeah.
Virgin. Mm-hmm. And like, I wonder if like Jasmine knew about this case because it's very eerily similar.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Huh.
Nonetheless, nothing happened until Jim's business partner became worried because Jim had missed a number of meetings at his job. So he swung by Jim and Naomi's home, and when he knocked, no one answered. However, after looking through the windows of the home, he did see that it looked kind of ransacked. So he went down to report it to the police that he thought that Jim's house had been broken into. So the police went to the home as well and also didn't get an answer when they knocked on the door, but they did leave a note informing Jim and Naomi to contact them as soon as they were returned to the residence. After seeing the note, Marlene took it upon herself to go down to the police station and to provide the police with a number of inconsistent stories.
Of course she did. She feels invincible. She thinks she's a know-it-all. She thinks she has got this in the bag. They have gotten away with it. Who is going to miss my parents? I am just a kid living alone on my daddy's credit cards in this big old house. Who's going to notice? Not me, not them.
And you would think that, but the stories that she told police were like, ma'am, is you stupid or is you dumb? You know?
Oh, Lord.
So her first story was that her parents were on vacation in Lake Tahoe, which seems very, you know, real. Like, oh, my parents are away. They're not here right now. Great. Who knows why she changed her story, but sis did. And what she said was that her parents had been kidnapped and killed.
Oh, okay. I would have stuck with Lake Tahoe.
And then she changed it again and said that one of her parents killed the other and then disappeared with the body.
And she's just been chilling at home.
Yeah. She even conveniently had an alibi for both her and Charles during the days of her parents' quote-unquote disappearance.
Wow, that's... I would have stuck with Lake Tahoe.
100%.
Yeah. And, but I feel like she got cocky. She thought she knew it all. I've got this. We're good. What?
Yeah. It, when I was reading it, I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
oh my gosh.
You just wanted to chat. You just wanted to chat to somebody about this.
Mm-mm. She was just waiting for him, waiting for them to ask her. She was dying. She was dying inside. She wanted to brag.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just her MO.
That's what you wanted to brag about? That your parents were kidnapped and killed?
Oh, yeah. To her.
And again, you're in their house. You're not worried at all. You're not. The only reason you went was after you received this note, like on the door. Like, come on, bro.
I wonder if they were in the house when both people like knocked on the door and were just like hiding.
Yeah, it didn't say, but I imagine that they were. Like, where else would they have been? I mean,
true.
It did say that they also like went to concerts during this time. So maybe they were at a concert. I don't know, but neither here nor there. So clearly the police didn't buy her stories at all. And they went to search the home. The house as a whole was absolutely disgusting because, remember, they were partying and pretty much doing whatever they wanted in that house. However, the master bedroom was spotless.
Huh. Weird.
That's suspicious.
That's weird.
And okay. And it was an immediate red flag.
Why are there roaches everywhere else except for this room?
Like, why is it oddly clean and the rest of the home is disgusting?
Exactly.
Eventually, exactly. It doesn't say why, but eventually Marlene led the police to where she and Chuck burned the bodies. I don't know what happened. Maybe she was like, ah, you got me. Let me take you. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something of that nature.
I mean, I feel like, you know, they when they start questioning all these different stories and they're like, okay, when are you really going to tell us what happened? She's like, oh, shucks. You pushed me to it.
Well, might as well tell you. I burned them.
Here's what happened, Frank.
Like, I don't know. So on July 10th, 1975, Charles and Marlene were both arrested and charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Once arrested, Charles sang like a canary.
Of course he did. He's a big teddy bear. I mean, he was a big teddy bear.
Yeah, he was nice until he got with Marlene. He just loved the wrong girl.
He did.
That's all.
He did.
He did. And I bet he regrets that every daggone day of his life.
Yeah.
So he told the police every detail about what him and Marlene had done. Marlene's trial was first in September of 1975, and after a psychiatric evaluation was done, it was determined that even though she was considered a troubled teen, she was definitely able to stand trial.
100%. Why would that have even been into question?
I guess because of her age, they wanted to make sure, you know. Because she was young at the time. I believe she was 16. At the time of the murders. Her attorney managed to get her trial handled in juvenile court instead of as an adult due to the fact that it was actually Charles who did the killings and not Marlene.
Are we serious?
We're serious.
But she planned everything.
Yeah.
So if it's in family court, then if she is sentenced, she could get out at 21.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Marlene was sentenced to 3 years at the Ventura School, which is a California Youth Authority's juvenile detention center located an hour outside of Los Angeles. Three years.
Not even a full hand. No. Nope. 3 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And what did our teddy bear get?
Charles, however, was tried in as an adult, as he was a legal adult at the time of the murders. His trial started on October 30th, 1975. And after a 7-week trial, Charles was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and was sentenced to the death penalty.
Oh, my God. So she gets to get out and go and have a completely different life at 18 years old, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Gets to literally act like none of it happened if she so chooses. Mm-hmm. Gets to move to another state if she so chooses.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sentenced to death.
And they even showed on trial that, like, I believe they put him under hypnosis to see how he was able to be easily manipulated by someone, i.e. Marlene. And it showed, like, he could be easily manipulated and all that. But still, at the end of the day, he killed them.
And I understand that. Yes, he did. He was he was the one that actually did all of that. But we see now in 2023, and I know that we really can't compare those time frames, but we see now people getting 25 years for conspiracy of murder. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that she got 3 years, even though she was 16, we're seeing kids get a lot worse.
Yeah. Like, and a juvenile detention facility at that. She wasn't even in jail.
Right.
You know?
And you know, she did not shed one tear over him. Not one. No. She never loved him.
Mm-mm. She was using him from the beginning, from Jump Street. However, in 1979, the California Supreme Court declared that the death penalty was unconstitutional, so his death sentence was changed to 2 life sentences running concurrently with the possibility of parole after 7 years.
Okay, well, at least parole is a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not saying much, but it's something.
Yeah. Now, Marlene only had to serve 3 years. But instead of just waiting until her release, she decided to escape by jumping the fence of the facility, like 2 months before she was supposed to be released.
She's so dumb. She irks me.
She, right? So she was found in July of 1979 working in a brothel.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. A brothel in New York City.
How did she get from LA to New York?
Well, when she hopped the fence, apparently there was a car waiting for her, and the car took her to New. But, like, again, who are you chatting with to be like, yo, be here outside, I'm gonna hop this fence, and we gonna drive off into the sunset together? What?
No, thank you.
No.
I saw how the last one worked out, so that's a no.
But she is a manipulator, so we never
know. Hard pass. Yeah. So she went to New York and was like, ah, got a great idea. I will go and work at a brothel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So after she was found at this brothel, she was sent back to Los Angeles to finish out her sentence. After being released, Marlene continued her life of crime.
Didn't get more charges after she broke out?
No, it didn't say. She just had to finish her sentence, I guess. Again, it's the times, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, my Lord.
So after being released, she continued her life of crime. She was arrested at least 7 times in the 1980s and was sent to jail 2 times for forgery. She even earned the nickname the Queen of Trashers by police in San Fernando Valley because she ran an ID counterfeiting ring that scammed businesses all over the area.
Oh.
Yeah. She's a stand-up citizen.
She really is. She is just winning in all the areas.
She's a stand-up gal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see how she's still single. Who wouldn't want to date that?
I mean, she's a scammer.
Mm.
The last update on Marlene is from 2003 when she was arrested for forging bad checks.
Well, we don't use checks anymore, so what's she doing now? Oh, credit card fraud. She's stealing people's credit cards.
I mean, I don't know what she's doing, but she's doing something.
Oh, she's got to be scamming somebody.
She has to be. Well, I mean, what? She was born in, when was she born? Let me go look at this birthday. Because how old?
She's probably up in this nursing home scamming folks out of their mashed potatoes.
Oh my gosh, yes. She was born in 1959. So that would make her, Brooke, do the math.
Okay, let me do that really quick.
In January of 1959.
64.
Damn. That's it?
That's it.
God damn. I thought she would have been more, like, decrepit.
Mm-mm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so she's 64, so she's probably not in a nursing home. What do you think she's doing now? She's probably doing scamming credit card fraud.
She's still scamming and jamming.
Still in IDs.
Mm-hmm.
Making fakes for those underage kiddos.
Dang. Just being a real stand-up citizen, I would say.
Yeah, she's a winner.
Yeah. As for Charles, he was granted parole on December 8th, 2015.
Look at Charles.
Yeah.
Charles, however, is older, though. Charles was born...
19... Hold on to me. Scroll up. Let me see, Charles, when you were born.
I said, wanted you to say like 1940 something. No, maybe not.
1955.
68. He's 68. Well, I hope he found some new poonanny and some, you know, and a nice lady.
Just a real nice lady, you know?
Like somebody who just likes to bird watch, you know? Yeah. Somebody simple.
Apparently, he had a parole hearing and they denied it because they were saying, like, even though he, you know, was a stand-up citizen, I believe he got his GED in jail, but they were saying that he was, like, saying that he wasn't as involved as he was in what happened.
Well, Charles, you can't change your story now, buddy. You did what you did and you have to serve your time.
Yeah.
And when they let you out, you just become a better member of society. That is what being reformed means. Well, now just go, you know, Charles, go find you a nice lady that watches birds in her free time and plays bingo on Saturdays.
Yeah, because who doesn't like bingo?
I love bingo.
Bingo's a fun time. I like bingo.
Me too.
And I know you like bingo. I saw you with your 17 cards that one time you were out here, girl.
Oh, yeah. I had so much fun.
Yeah. So his first parole was denied, and then it was reversed on December 8th, 2015. And as far as everything goes, Charles and Marlene haven't seen each other since 1981, I believe, is what I read.
So Charles was not like our little criminal, and he like straightened up. Like he hasn't had any other offenses since he got out, but you know, Marlene's over there just checking them off the list.
Yeah, and she's changed her names a bunch of times, so I don't even know if she's Marlene anymore.
She's probably not. She's probably using one of those IDs.
Factual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that
I don't like her.
I don't like her either. She just...
And I'm not saying she had the best mama because she didn't.
No.
Naomi was not winning any Mother of the Year awards.
No.
But that was no reason to take her life.
There's never a reason.
You just let your mama talk to her fish and go about your business.
You know, and like we always said, you have a choice.
You do.
You have a choice. And she chose wrong.
She made the wrong one. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You chose wrong, Marlene. You could have done better for yourself. You could have done better.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be scamming and jamming.
Boo you, Marlene. Boo you.
Yeah. You're just not a good person. But yeah, that is the barbecue murders.
Well, thanks, Ashley, for...
Yeah, that's really all we can say. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're welcome. I was happy to deliver it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way past my bedtime, so I'm going to sleep after this.
Samesies, even though I'm kind of hungry, so I might make myself a snack and then go to bed.
Sounds good.
But nonetheless, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you next Monday for Brooke's episode.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.